Purpose. If we don't have a purpose, we are most to be pitied, aren't we? It's a horrible thing to feel like you don't have a purpose. And in fact, one of the things that is now substantiated by numerous studies is that people with purpose live longer than those without a purpose. And not only that, there's some pretty significant research that would suggest that that people who live consistent with God's purpose for their life live longer than those even with just living for a purpose. And so if we're living a godly purpose, we have longer life, not necessarily guaranteed. We won't live like Methuselah or anything like that. But over time and over the study and over gobs of people, that if we live according to God's purposes for our lives, not necessarily live according to God's laws, you know, properly and all that, but if we live with God's purpose in mind, guiding our relationships and our lives and our existence, that people tend to live longer. I think that's pretty cool. And of course, beyond that, we also have those studies that say that few people die in church on Sunday morning, so it must be a safe place to come. But we could always, have a conversation about that too. But purpose, are we living with purpose? And that's our resolve, but primarily we have a lot to say about whether or not we're living according to God's purpose. But living without purpose means that we're living, we have motion without meaning. Okay, listen to these. I had to work on these. Motion without meaning, activity without direction, and events without reason. Now, I think those are pretty powerful statements because we all know there's no shortage, it's easy to fill our lives with motion, activity, and events. But it's a little bit more of a struggle to fill our lives with meaning, direction, and reason. We can be busy, but that's not necessarily mean that we have significance. And so, and that's not just our time. The Bible has its authors who struggled with that very same thing. So this, I'm not saying that this is a 2016 mysterious event of human existence. Listen to Isaiah. I have labored to no purpose. I have spent my strength in vain for nothing. Might have been busy. Isaiah has been busy, in fact. I mean, gee whiz, it took a lot of chapters, 64 chapters or something like that to explain his work. But so he's had a lot of activity, a lot of motion, not much meaning, no purpose. Well, and then, of course, it wouldn't be complete without Jeff's favorite character. Who would that be, Jeff? Job. Okay, and so, look at that, he even knew it. Yeah. Anyway, and Job said, my life drags by day after hopeless day. Okay, so sometimes we have days like that, don't we? But Job, it was not fun at all. And then he wrote later, I give up. I'm tired of living. Leave me alone. My life makes no sense, Job said. So this is not a 2016 thing. This is humanity's thing. We have to we come and go with meaning and purpose, but we can resolve to seek it and do some things. It's been said that the greatest tragedy is not a death. The greatest tragedy is life, is living without life. It's living without purpose. It's living but feeling like Isaiah or Job. And so to have purpose in life is so important. You've heard about the little baby camel. Mama, why do I have these big floppy feet? Well, that's so that when you go across the sands of the desert, you stay on top of the sand, you don't sink in. Oh, Mama, why do I have these big long eyelashes? Well, that's so that when you're going across the desert and the wind blows and the sands come up, those eyelashes keep the sand from going in your eyes. Oh. Mama, why do I have these this hump or two humps on my back? Well, that's so that when you're going through the desert where there is no water, they're filled with water and you don't have to have water for long periods of time. Oh. Mama, why are we in the zoo? Purpose. What's our purpose? What are we here for? How are we making a difference? And we have all this weight and baggage and freight, but how can it make a difference in the world, and how can I make it into something? How can I make my life my offering, my whole life my offering to God? So Jesus asked his disciples, hey, what's the word on the street, boys? And they had the word from the street because Jesus had sent them out. And they said, man, they think you're the biggest news since John the Baptist. And some think that you might be the Elijah even. And I don't know. I don't know what the disciples are doing at that point. Remember that John the Baptist was beheaded. And so, you know, I mean, like, did anybody watch the Cincinnati and Pittsburgh game yesterday? Anybody watch that? Yeah, yeah. And so how would you feel if I said, hey, you remind me of somebody who plays on the Cincinnati defense? How would you feel? You know, you might slap me, right? Were you one of the Cincinnati fans in the stands yesterday? Throwing stuff at, you know... You might slap me. And so if I would say, hey, you remind me of John the Baptist, you'd be thinking, I better start wearing something around my neck because somebody's going to come and take my head off my shoulders. I don't know if the disciples are that way or if they're giving high fives. Yeah, dude. I don't know. Hard to say. But I think that they're pretty cool on that because, I mean, just think about it. Okay. Now, this is just in the immediate chapters right before this chapter that Jen read earlier. Jesus has just messed around with a man experiencing the ravages of leprosy, a skin disease that, as I understand it, kind of eats your flesh. Gross, yeah. And most people would say, it was illegal for lepers to put themselves in the context of other people, but Jesus went into the context. Wow, cool. And then Jesus healed a person who was paralyzed. Doesn't happen every day, I bet. And then Jesus healed some women, and even talking to the women and letting them get close to him, that was pretty big stuff. And then he went across the Sea of Galilee, and he freed that guy with the evil spirit. The pigs got the bad end of it, but hey, they're just pigs, okay? And so, no big deal, but that was pretty cool. And then he sent the 12 disciples out together after giving them, quote, power and authority over all demons and to heal sickness. And then they returned excited. Oh, were they excited? Even to the point that Jesus determined it was... probably better if they take a time out now. Now, Luke doesn't say the disciples needed a time out. Luke just says, and they went away privately. But that you and I both know that it's a time out. The disciples were so excited, so heavenly minded. They were, they were doing, hey, Jesus, look at the selfie I took of that lady that I healed. Isn't that cool? Man, that was so much fun. And they might have even been forgetting who did the work and whose power they were exercising. And so, and then if that wasn't enough for the disciples, just before Jesus questioned to them, who do you say that I am? They had the picnic. They invited 5,000 of their favorite men, and some women and children were there too. And they gave everybody all the food they could eat. It must have been a marvelous event. And the disciples were really pleased with that. And so, putting it in our terms that we might understand, who do you say that I am? Now, the disciples have to get around that question because to them, Jesus is the best quarterback in the league. He shoots three-pointers at a 75% range and pitches no-hitters. And he's an all-American academic. So who do you say that I am? Well, some people say you're John the Baptist, others Elijah, some others a great prophet. Yeah, but who do you say that I am? From what you've seen me do, from what you've heard me say, who do you say that I am? Peter, impetuous Peter, you are the Christ. You are the Son of God. And then Peter's witness goes on from there, strong throughout the book of Acts and all of that. That statement gives him purpose in his life. For the first 300 years of Christianity, you know, it was illegal to be Christian until Constantine did his little putting the cross on the shields and everything. So it was illegal for you to even say the name of Jesus. It was illegal for you to say, I am a Christian. And it could be, you know, one of the neatest things. I mean, if you would have a garden party, and if you were a Roman official, you could dip a Christian in a vat of tar and then hang them up in your garden and light them on fire, and they would be a screaming, living torch to light your garden party. And everybody would say, oh, wow, that was really cool. So what kind of purpose makes a person say, in that context, I'm a Jesus follower. I follow the Christ. That's a strong resolve, no? That's amazing. Would I don't know. We have it pretty cushy, don't we? In America, where it's okay to be here. Wow. I don't know. But their resolve to profess Jesus was because they followed closely. The first people were covered in his dust. They would scrape it off. Jesus at the front of the pack, and you kind of have those images of the cowboy movies. You always wanted to be toward the front, I always perceive, even if they were just shooting a scene, because those in the back had the dust of everybody on them. And to follow closely enough to Jesus to get his dust would be significant. In writing to the Colossians, the Apostle Paul wrote of Christ that all things are held together in him so that he might occupy the first place in everything. The first place in everything. Josh McDowell tells a story. A professional headhunter, like somebody who hires executives, was telling him that that one of his manners of interviewing people is he gets this person who he's looking to be a top executive in big firms. He says, I like to disarm them a little bit. So I get them in a situation, maybe give them something to drink, and I loosen my tie, open my coat and vest, maybe even put my feet up a little bit, talk football. And then when I think they're totally disarmed, I say, and what's your purpose in life? He said, you'd be surprised how top candidates melt when asked, what's your purpose in life? But he said, one guy, I thought I had him totally disarmed, and we were just talking football like mad, and we were very much at ease. Then I said, and what's your purpose in life? And that man looked right at me without missing a beat and said, go to heaven and take as many people with me as I can. Purpose in life. Well, I don't know. We can make up our own, but it seems like that's what Jesus is talking about. You know, you look at Matthew 28, and there's this is called the mission of the church. It's the great commission to the disciples. It's our mission. It's the church's mission to do this. When Jesus came near and spoke to them, I've received all authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything that I've commanded you. And look, I'll be with you till the end of the age and beyond. That's the purpose of the church. That's our purpose as Christians. We could say, go to heaven, and I would add, and make this earth as good as we can. as good a place as we can, and then take as many people as we can with us in that final day. That's our mission. That's our purpose. If the church doesn't do that, the church has lost its mission.